me or so, because this chanting is something we do it all the time. It is our life. It's not just that we do it on stage.
We do it anywhere.
We do it in the living room, in a temple, sometimes on stage also. We do it out in a park, sitting under a tree, with a picnic. We chant anywhere, anytime, any place, on top of a mountain, on a boat, on a lake, or even on the ocean. And each time, it's a new experience. Because these are not ordinary words. These are transcendental words. And it's the transcendental element that makes it interesting. One can look at it like music and say it's nice music, but maybe a little repetitious. We were on a boat, I was saying, on the sea, actually. And we had a long crossover of 30 hours. We were going from the Netherlands towards Denmark, and it was a 30-hour crossing. And there was no wind. We were on an engine, just put on the boat. And 30 hours, and we played kirtan the whole 30 hours, non-stop, different teams, you know, took over at different times. So at the end of the 30 hours, you can imagine how it was, the kirtan. When you do 30 hours of kirtan, at the end, the kirtan is definitely flying. So then we had to go through a sluice gate. Yeah? And we come in this sluice gate, because we're going through a part of Denmark and Germany through a canal. And we're going through this canal, we have to go in the sluice gate. And it was a German sluice gate, and everything was automated. There were no people. It's just a control tower, and everything automated. So the doors opened, okay, we came in, the doors closed, the water level started to go down. But we didn't care, because we had just done 30 hours of kirtan, and we carried on with our kirtan. So the kirtan was just getting very enthusiastic. It was echoing off the concrete walls in the sluice gate, and it was getting serious. And then a loudspeaker voice came out of the wall and said, "Do you have any other tune?" That is, when we look at it like music, from a material point of view, let me think, do we have another tune? Are there any other words, any variety? But when we look at it like from a transcendental perspective, then we see that there's a whole different dimension to it, a spiritual dimension. And that dimension is just an ocean of blessings, that spiritual dimension. Yeah. We, with each mantra, so much karma is removed. With each mantra, we are uplifted above all that small-mindedness that we got from all the things that preoccupied our mind, now uplifted to a transcendental plane, to the eternal platform. And ultimately, more and more we reveal in that chanting about the spiritual dimension. So that makes the whole thing magic. That is what is the unique element in the experience, that transcendental spiritual dimension. Without it, it would just be music. Nice. Entertaining. But after a while, you know, something else. Are we going to get a dance now, or what, or something? Or is it just the same old tune? Yeah, the same old mantra, but with an unlimited spiritual dimension. Because Krishna is unlimited. His qualities are unlimited. There is no end to Krishna's qualities. You cannot say, now I know everything about Krishna. No. One begins to know Krishna. And then one finds out more about Krishna. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's an interesting point. It is said, Srimati Radharani, she is the devotee of Krishna. the Supreme Lord. And her devotion is very deep. It's not just devotion, but it's loving devotion. So it is said that there's a competition between her love and the qualities of Krishna. So Krishna's qualities are unlimited. So each time when Radharani discovers a new quality in Krishna, she loves that also. And in that way, her love is increasing. And then she discovers another quality of Krishna. And again, her love is increasing. In this way, spiritual love is not like the love of the material world, like we've loved each other for the last 40 years, and or 50 years, 60 years, and like, we still love each other, of course, but, you know, the romance days are over. No. In this, on the spiritual platform of love, there's no limit to love. Love is eternally growing. There's always something new to discover. So when we speak about this mantra and the spiritual dimension, there's always new, something new to discover. And that is why when we do kirtan, after some time we feel we have to do it again. That's the thing about it. That's the nature of spiritual things. Yeah, that was nice. We'll do it again. Same with prasadam, right? The foodstuffs that have been offered to Krishna. And they also have a spiritual dimension. And once you've had it once, then you go, we'll have that again. And again. And then again. And again. So this is a spiritual life. A taste awakens. And it is, the topic for the evening is that taste. Known as a higher taste. It is in Sanskrit known as ruchi. It says in spiritual life, one begins with some sraddha. Sraddha means, is translated with faith. The root of the word sraddha can be traced back to srat. Srat means that which is heard. Srat, da. And da means dharana, to fix in the heart. So that which is heard becomes fixed in the heart. Things only become fixed in the heart when we believe in it. Otherwise, it doesn't become fixed in the heart. But if you think something is good and we're convinced, then it becomes fixed in the heart. Otherwise, if there's doubt, it doesn't become fixed at all. So shraddha begins there. We hear something. My biographer, who he described how I went to India, when I was still quite young, and I saw some extraordinary things in India. One thing I saw, that one day there was a dead body lying in the street. Now, I don't know, but I had never seen that. So I was like, wow, dead in the street. And in Australia or in Europe or America, if something like that happens within moments, there's an ambulance, police, and everything is there. In India, no, nothing happens. The body was lying and people were walking past. When I had a good look, it was an old man. I had a good look and I saw he was a beggar actually. I'd seen him the day before. I said, oh my God, the beggar has died. That's what it is. And the people were walking past and they all threw some coins on the body. And in about 10-15 minutes, the whole body was buried in coins. So I'm looking like, what's happening here? No, really, you would also, you know. Said, this man was a beggar. Yesterday he had no money, today he's dead, and now they bury him in money. What is going on here? So I asked someone, and they said, when a person dies, and at that point the soul leaves the body, And that soul can no longer go back into that body. The soul can see everything. The soul can hear everything. But people cannot hear him. Then, what to do? They say, now this person has to go to the next destination. No longer try to return to that body. So therefore, in the Vedic tradition, the body soon after death has to be burned. So that there is no possibility of returning, of trying to return. And that the soul then must continue on its destiny to the next, whatever that is, the next destination. So then, because this man was so poor and had no money, there was no money for the firewood. Right? So therefore everyone chipped in some coins so that some firewood could be burned, could be bought, so that the body could be burnt. And I was thinking, what a country. What a culture. I said, to save his life, they wouldn't spend anything. But to save his soul, right? Just see. And you know, where I'm from is just the opposite. You know, spend all the money to keep someone alive, $1 million. And after that, and it's over. So it was quite amazing, an amazing experience. And actually, later on I realized this was a Bhagavad Gita experience. Right? This was Bhagavad Gita illustrated. I actually saw the Bhagavad Gita right there in the street. Because the Bhagavad Gita tells us, Deena, Deena, what is Deena, Srinya, Tadei, Komaram, Yoganam, Jarata, Tadei, Antarakrati, Tirasatana, Uyati. That we are going through different bodies in this life and then also at the end of life. So the Bhagavad Gita, in so many ways, was saying, Nahanyate, Hanyamane, Sarire, the soul doesn't, it never dies. When the body is slain, the soul is not slain. Still alive. And this is what all these people believed. Everyone believed it. Right? Not just a few, but that was the normal understanding in Benares in 1970, which of course now was a long time ago. But at that time that was a common understanding. And the Bhagavad Gita gives us that understanding. So I realize all these people know the Bhagavad Gita. They all know. They all have that knowledge of the Gita. And this Gita is the foundation of the worldview of society. That life after life, the living being is going through a cycle of birth and death. And why is it so? Because of attachment. Because of attachment. Yam yam bhavisvaram bhavam chartyam tikadevaram. Whatever path, whatever consciousness one has at the end of life, that determines the next destination. If I go back to the man with the bumper sticker, if you smash it like car, smash it in your face, then say, okay, that's car consciousness. So yeah, what kind of karma is that? Yeah. If you have only car consciousness, then obviously in the next life you come back and maybe you'll become, I don't know, maybe a car dealer. Right? Possibly. You might get a job as a car dealer, you need to sell cars all life because always thinking about cars. So it's logical. Because in this life also, whatever's on our mind, whatever's on your mind, ultimately you're going to do that. Yeah? You think about something for a long time, then you're going to do it.
In this life too. You think about the whole day. You think about when I come home, I'm going to eat ice cream. When I go home, I'm going to eat ice cream. When I come home, I'm going to eat ice cream. If I say it long enough, then you'll come home and you're going to eat ice cream.
They should give you some. Yes, because you sang very nice on stage, so she deserves some ice cream. Whatever we think about, sooner or later we're going to do it. That's how it is. So it's not surprising that this continues. That even at the time of death, we are not. It's not suddenly over. Up to the moment of death, is there thinking of all these things, so attached, and then that at the time of death, it's still there. Therefore, this idea of reincarnation is very logical. When I first heard about reincarnation, I was scratching my head. I was thinking, this is strange. It's a nice idea, but why? Why? I couldn't figure it out. As a Westerner, I just couldn't get it. And why? Why reincarnation? Not that there is reincarnation, but why? Didn't make sense to me. I couldn't figure it out. So I was doubtful. But then later I understood it and said, like, whatever's on your mind, it just doesn't go away so easy. And then again, we will try again. We tried so hard this life, still not enough. At 88, I'm still young, still ready to try and enjoy this material world. Anyway, so spiritual life means that we just gradually realize our eternal nature and that we are eternal servants. You can't help it to serve. Imagine you have a family and the man in the house is the authoritarian type. Right? Who points his chest and who says, who's in charge in this house? Right? The lady smiles, she knows. and then the child cries. And suddenly both the parents are serving the child. Are you alright? Who's in charge? Okay. Who's in charge? So you tell me, yeah. And then, you know, and then it's morning and the children, they have to go to school, right? Who's in charge? The parents both go to work and the dog is sleeping on the sofa. And who is in charge? That's the question. So it's hard to say who's really in charge if you think about it. Yes. Because ultimately, everyone has to serve. Yeah? You have to serve. The boss has to do more work than the workers. Yeah? That's how it actually is. You know, workers, okay, it's time to go home. The boss, forget it. You know, he's the work done. It's not done. He can't go home. Yeah?
And he has to set an example also.
Yeah? He has to set an example of these things. Yes, correct. Yes, so it's not so easy. To escape serving. No one can escape serving because that is our nature. We are all servants. But servants of who? And Prabhupada gave our spiritual master. He was in Scotland. And the devotees, they rented a big theater. And it was filled with people. People on the balcony, like a big cinema type of theater. Everyone sitting in these flat chairs and balconies and everything. Packed house. People were standing in the aisles. Prabhupada gave a lecture, and at the end, they asked for questions. And on that occasion, they made an arrangement for a microphone on the stand. Whoever wanted to ask a question could come forward and ask the question. So one man comes forward, and he speaks in the microphone and he says, he starts a whole big lecture on about energies and about cosmic energies and cosmic consciousness, and finally he ends and he says, I am God. And Prabhupada said, is that all you have to say? Are you finished? And sort of, yeah, that's it. And Prabhupada said, you are not God, you are dog. and then the whole theater started laughing and they applauded. And then the man sort of also smiled. And he was defeated. Right. Because he had to admit, I'm not great. I'm not a cage. God means in control. I also once met God. Yes, I met him. In New York, on a park bench. And God, right, he was old. He told me he was 64 years old. And he had one tooth missing. And he was sitting on the bench. And he said, yes, I'm God. I said to him, I said, my dear God, I'm so happy to meet you. Because for 40 years I've dedicated my life to you, trying to be your devotee. And I never thought I would meet you in person. But today is I'm so fortunate that I meet you in person. I only have a little doubt, you know, because of your appearance. Can you please give me a sign that you are really God? You know, just so clear my mind. He said, yes, what would you want? I said, well, maybe you can make the trees a little taller because the sun is quite hot. We have some shade, you know, if you could make them a little taller. He says, what makes you think that God can do that? I said, well, isn't God all-powerful? He said, that is your definition of God. I said, then what is your definition of God? That he's a toothless old man sitting on a bench without any power? Then everybody can be God. Then everybody can be God. But if God is all-powerful, then we have a problem. At least I'm not all-powerful.
You?
She's also not all-powerful.
You look powerful.
I think you're pretty powerful. He's also not powerful. He's a powerful child. Anyway, but all powerful. We may be powerful, absolutely.
Like in the back there, Param Brahma, can you stand up for a moment?
This is Param Brahma. He's a Punjabi. And he grew up with milk, ghee, and roti. And you can see it, isn't it? He looks the part. His grandfather was a wrestler. And he could have been
also a very strong man.
But even Param Brahma is not all powerful. Although, anyone ready to wrestle him, you know, you better watch out. Eh? Is there anyone in the room who wants to try? See?
No.
Champion, undefeated. But then Krishna, in the wrestling arena in Mathura, defeated huge wrestlers, enormous wrestlers, many times bigger than his size, but easily defeated. He's the Supreme Lord, the unlimited reservoir of all strength. Oh. So that we understand that ultimately we are therefore servants of the all-powerful Supreme Lord. And this is really the message of the Gita. One can read that we are eternal beings. That is the first part. And the second part is that we are eternal servants of Krishna. And on what do I base that? On the first Brahmabhuta Prasana Manakangsati Associati Sava Service Abhutasi Madhbhakti Bhavate Brahm. First, you realize you're not the body, and then you become the servant of Krishna. So we should serve the best. Why not? Serve the very best. So Krishna is the best. So let's serve Krishna. And that is the message of the Gita. And if one serves the best, you know, the servants of the king, where do they live? Where do the servants of the king live? No, the servants of the king, where do they live? And where does the king live? Yes, in the middle. And what kind of house does the king have? What's it called? The house of the king?
Castle
of the
kingdom?
Yeah, a castle or a palace, something like that. So when the king lives in a castle or in a palace, then where do the servants live? Oh, in the palace also. Yeah, and they are in the palace, and the king eats very nice, and the servants, they also eat very nice. King has fancy dress, servants also get fancy dress. So in the same way, so the servants of Krishna, since he's the best and has the best of everything, the servants of Krishna get the best of everything. Therefore, there's no better life than to be a servant of Krishna. What's your name?
Shreya.
Shreya. Very nice to meet Shreya. An applause for Shreya. So that is very nice. With some examples, with some stories, with some verses, I've touched upon the theme of the Bhagavad Gita. And I've tried to give us an insight in that Bhagavad Gita by summarizing it to its essence. That we are eternal servants, and we cannot change that. So then, we should serve the eternal. Yeah. Why serve something temporary? If we are eternal servants, we should serve the eternal. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita points at the Supreme Lord. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't take care of the temporary, like the evening is moving along, and we're getting a little hungry, and that is natural. And although it's temporary, still it needs to be attended to. It may not be that we're eternally hungry, but still, we need to eat something that's there. So, keeping that in mind, we're going in that direction. But no matter how much you eat, some people, they are very big eaters, some are very small eaters. Are you a big eater? And you, a big one or a small? I think you're a big eater. Yes, he is. He has a smile on his face. So, big eaters are there, absolutely, and small eaters. But no matter how much you eat, it's only temporary. The result is only temporary. Tomorrow morning you'll be hungry again. Breakfast time, but you ate so much last night, doesn't matter, I'm hungry. So when we are serving, when we pay attention to the temporary, the result is also only temporary. And that's with everything. Whatever temporary thing we care for, the result will also be temporary. But when we are serving the eternal, the result will be eternal. That's why in life, we do both. It's not one or the other, we do both. But obviously, of the two, the eternal is the most important. So that is really the Bhagavad Gita. You have all have a pen and paper. And the strategy is that if you take a moment to write down a question, and I will, meanwhile, at 5 minutes soft gear time to give you the time to write down a question. But please all write down something, that would be very nice. It doesn't have to be directly related to the topic of the lecture. Any question really, I can try. So the first question. Life is so busy, how can we find time for spiritual matters and practices? By spiritualizing life. For example, we work, and it takes a lot of time. But the question is, what do we do with the money? That's the key point, you know. If we use the money to maintain a proper environment, the spiritual environment, according to the Bhagavad Gita, then that work is also supporting our spiritual life. And then it also counts as part of our spiritual life. And then that work will not pull us down. So in this way, it is said, Karnayivadikaraste mafalesu kadachanam karma falahetu bhur maste sangusta karmani. That we have the right to work, but we do not have the right to take the fruits of our work. The fruits of our work must be offered to Krishna. So as simple as that. And then you want to have children? Have a dozen. And I'm personally in favor that all Hare Krishnas should have at least 12 children. At least in that way the Muslims are doing it. Why not us?
They should be able to manage them, right?
We should have at least 12. Dozen, why not? It's easy because the older ones look after the younger ones. So actually
that do not happen.
Huh?
That do not happen.
In that way it's easier. And also, you know, the clothes they also move down. That's how it used to be. So now life is so busy, that is true. But that is all right. As long as we're busy with the right things. Yeah. And some jobs are also out of the question. Like I saw statistics and I saw that India is the biggest leather exporter in the world. But that is not something we can get involved. That's not for the world. That's not for followers of the Gita. That is contaminated. So one must live a life by the Gita, not in a restaurant and then some tandoori chicken or whatever. That's not possible, because in that we lose our purity. So even in our job, we should not sacrifice that purity. Now there may be some smaller fault in every job. Okay, that can be overlooked, says the Bhagavad Gita. But we cannot choose the wrong profession. So in this way, our work, even our life, can also, whatever we have to do, can be used in Krishna's service. My question is, how can we serve the eternal Krishna/Krishna? It's easy. We can just simply we can chant Krishna's name. We can make an altar. We can serve Krishna on that altar. We can offer whatever we eat to Krishna. Or basically whatever we do, yet karusi, yet asnasi, yet jihusi, yet dasi, yet tapasi, yet kunti, yet tat krishna marakana. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever austerity you perform, do it for Krishna. And the Bhagavad Gita tells us what Krishna likes. Padram pusvam talam tariyam yome bhakti priyatsitis. Offer me a flower, a fruit, a leaf, some water, and so on. So it is clear. And it says, yagya-sista-sino-santo-muchante-javakil-visaya. We must offer. We should take yagya-sista, remnants of sacrifice. So we must offer to Krishna. So these kind of things. In Krishna, you cannot offer some garlic and onions or other things. But to. So that way, it is simple. So many questions, so I'll go quickly. In this busy life, how do we take time off for spirituality, to chant the Maha Mantra, etc.? Well, in the early morning, when the world is still asleep, this is the magic time. It is so nice, actually. Not the first day. The first day, you're rubbing your eyes and thinking, oh no, I want to be in bed. But after a while, you get used to it, and then it's nice. Because it's very peaceful. When there are no cars on the road, only birds. It's actually the best time of the day, the early morning. And that is the time when we can chant peacefully. And there's nobody to call. And of course there is mail to download, but somehow or other, whatever you do, do not put your phone in your pocket while chanting. Do not. Leave it. Leave it to the side. Do not chant with the phone. That's the worst thing to do. That. Because the phones are the biggest distraction you ever see in the world. I've never seen something quite like it. Wherever you are, people are just all the time looking at their phones.
Even when we sit next to each other, we can chat on the phone.
What's that? So it's like we can't even talk anymore. We're always distracted by the phone. So maybe when you want to chant, put your phone somewhere else. Leave it in the room. And you'll find that suddenly, you can chant. And then early in the morning, it's ready. Better than late night phone with television. And every Maharaj inspires me in some or the other way. So much to learn from everyone. How do we find out the perfect Diksha Guru for us? Do we wait for a light bulb moment? Or keep listening, reading, and one day we will know?
I think one can even if one finds meeting a Swami, a teacher, and then one can, there's no need to just passively wait for the light bulb to go on. One can actually inquire. One can begin to ask questions. One can speak to a spiritual master. Or write to a spiritual master. And by doing so, we start to get answers. And if the answers are inspiring us further, then a relationship begins to develop, ongoing communication. And in that way, we must take... It's a little more than just wait and for one day for the light to go on. We must take some initiative. Ask a question. Also ask, can I serve? Can I do something? We always strive for material security. But what is spiritual security? Well, just like material security, what is it ultimately? I guess money in the bank, right? Nowadays, all money goes to the bank. Anyway, so money in the bank, right? That is material security. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we find the verse, Nehabikramanasasthipratyavayanavityatisvabhamabhyasthidharmasyatayatemahatopriyat. It is said that whatever you do in devotional service, it is never lost. So Prabhupada calls this the spiritual bank balance. So everything you do for Krishna goes in a spiritual bank balance. You get credit for it. And that credit is your security. If you've served Krishna for a long time, then at the end of life, you're not afraid. You're free from fear at that time. But if you've done many sinful activities and all kinds of nonsense, then at the end of life, you feel afraid. So spiritual security is that spiritual bank balance from all the service we've done. If at all we go back to Goloka Vrindavan, that's the spiritual, is there a chance of falling down again? No. Bhagavad Gita says 90 months, 80 soldiers, you know, you will not fall down again for watching. So, no, once we are there, we'll stay there eternally. This is the same question, how do I find a spiritual master? So I kind of mentioned it. We should try to make a relationship by inquiry. Bhagavad Gita. See, today I answer all the questions from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says, Tadvi paripate paripase nasevya upadikshantite jnanam jnanyas tattadarsina. The spiritual master can impart transcendental knowledge to us because he has seen the truth. You know, we should, in a submissive state of mind, inquire. So it's about the inquiry.
How do you achieve forgiveness for the wrongdoings in this material world? Is it taken care under the karma? Yes. Whatever we've done wrong in the past, if we take up devotional service, that will be written off gradually. So it's like the fan. As soon as you take up devotional service, the fan of karma has been spinning for a long time, but you turn off the switch. So the fan doesn't stop immediately. It's still spinning, but it slows down. So as soon as we take up service, the fan slows down. The karma slows down. And after some time, it stops. Okay. So that's true. Is caring for environment and protecting it to save animals a form of worship? Not exactly a form of worship, but it is pious activity. Just like in previous time, people would make wells along the road for people so they could drink there, or shelters. And that is considered pious activity. Such pious activity gives you good material facility in the future, either in this life or in the next. But it doesn't give you any spiritual, eternal benefit. So caring for the environment doesn't give you eternal benefit. It gives you benefits because it is in goodness, but it is temporary benefit, not eternal. Is Lord Buddha a reincarnation of Krishna? Yes, he's a partial expansion of Krishna. So he doesn't have the full power of Krishna, but he has partial power of Krishna. And he comes for a particular reason. It is said in the Padma Purana, Mayavan Asat Shastram, Buddha came to take the people away from the Vedic culture. And why is it so? Because the people, in the name of Vedic culture, were slaughtering so many animals. So then Buddha came, took people away from the Vedic culture. And then later, Sankaracharya came, and he taught a philosophy very close to Buddhism, but based on Veda. He brought people back to the Veda. Then, now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Bhakti Acharyas, they give the full understanding of the Veda. That the real purpose of the Veda is to serve Krishna. And how can I say that? Because it says like that in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedaishta sarve aham eva vedo vedantakrit vedavit eva taham. Krishna says, I am the purpose of all the Vedas. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. So, that settles that. We come from God, then why we have to live away from God? What made us to live away from God? Because we developed a desire to take His place.
It's like you have a better cushion than me. So it wants to point.
We try to take the more comfortable place. And because we try to take the place of God, that's why we're in this world. And everyone thinks, I am the center of everything. I'm the most important. Me. I'm the most important. No, I'm the most important. I'm the most important. I'm the most important. And like this, we fight with each other. But if we accept that Krishna is the most important, then no more fighting. Then no more need for borders, no more need for visas, and all those things. What was the inspiration of force which you to go to India, motivated you to go to India? The inspiration of force was that I grew up in the Netherlands after the Second World War, immediately after the Second World War. And the Netherlands is a country which has the biggest port, Rotterdam, very, very large port. Yeah? And in a war, ports are important, so they bombed it like anything. They tried to destroy that port, and not only the port, the Netherlands was heavily bombed during the Second World War. Everything was destroyed. There was, in 1945, in the last winter, there was no food. There was not a dog and cat left in the country. The people were eating the bulbs from the flowers, tulip bulbs. My parents would dig in the garden to take out the flower bulbs and eat them, because there was nothing to eat. Starvation, complete starvation. So after the war, the generation of my parents who went through the war, they had to rebuild the nation. So they were working very hard, and religion went very much in the background. There was no time for it. It was just, you know, we have things to do. We have to work hard. So they worked very hard, and in 20 years' time, they did it. The economy was back up, everything done. And then they said, we had two televisions in the house, one upstairs, one downstairs, and half the family was watching one channel, other one was on the channel, and we had fridges, we had everything you could want. And then my parents said, my dear children, we did it all for you. And then we were the ungrateful children. We said, but we never asked for this. It is all about money. And there was a band who became very famous. It was the Voice of the Youth, and they sang, money can't buy you love. And that's what we told our parents. Money can't buy you love. Life is not all about money. So we were interested in spiritual. So we said, there was nothing, no spiritual life. So then I heard, people were saying, India is a very spiritual place.
You heard it from books, or you heard it from some guru?
No, the gurus had not come yet. They had not come yet. No, the gurus, they did. The only one who came early was Vivekananda. They all came after. So these gurus, they came after. No, I went early. But there was some people from the West had been. Some knowledge had come. Some books had come. Some interest had awakened. So I heard from some young people that had been in India, and they were different. So I decided I should go. So I went. As he said, my father didn't give me any money, Dad, but my mother did. So I had some money, not a lot, but something. And I escaped, and I went mainly by bus, and sometimes by truck also. So very cheap. And took 3 weeks to get there. And then I came to India, and at the time, 1970, there was a lot of stress between India and Pakistan, because in 71 was the war. So there was no crossing of the border of any vehicles. You had to walk. So I walked into India, and there was a man, a sardar, with a big turban. He was sitting in a uniform, and a big mustache, sitting behind a desk under a tree. So I really thought, this is far out, you know? His office is under a tree. Yeah, I really like that. So then he stopped, he said, so why you came to India? I said, well, I heard that India is a very spiritual country. He said, ah, very good. Then you will go to Varanasi. He said, sir, you don't argue with a man in uniform. You don't argue with him. Whatever they say, yes, yes. So I said, yes, yes. He said, you will go to Varanasi. I said, yes, yes. And he said, yes, you will go because I will buy you the ticket. And he met me at the station 6 o'clock at night. He bought me the ticket. So that's nice. Did that ever happen to you? Customers in Australia, they buy you the ticket. And then they charge you money, but they don't. They buy you a ticket. So that was very nice. So that actually was something that... and then, so I had to go to Varanasi. And then I took Ganga and all these things. So in this way... slowly, I became influenced. I was a musician, and I guess you're not surprised. And as a musician, and there was this mantra coming from a temple, and it was in Pakka Sudhindi, Kyunki Banaras Mental, Lotus Piriku Sudhindi. So, if they went, and I like that. It sounded musical to my ears. See, see them. So I had the mantra, see them, and later I had to go back to my country. This, you know, they played it 24 hours, so the local top hit, it went into my head. Couldn't get rid of it. And it just stuck in my head. So then I was back in Holland, I was driving my car, and it was like, see them, it just stuck with me. So that mantra stayed. So like that, slowly. So I decided to go back to India. Okay, this is a compliment. So it's private. I have been coming to the temple for past two, three years. I scribble off and on. Please tell me how we should progress from here and take Krishna consciousness seriously. Well, as I said, it begins with some faith. And then the next thing is we start to associate with devotees. And then devotees are following a process. And they'll teach us the process of bhakti. And by learning from them the process of bhakti, and by regularly also practicing the process of bhakti, the heart becomes purified. Then when the heart becomes purified, then we become convinced and we become really dedicated. See, I will do a little theater performance for you to entertain you, if that's okay, if you don't mind. It's just one act I sometimes do. You know, my house, it's not new at all, and you know something, Surya, it's leaking like anything. And we put all the pots and pans whenever it rains, right? But as of late, we don't have enough pots and pans anymore. It's getting too much, really. So, you know, last 3 days has been really good weather, so, and today is my day off. So I'm going to fix the roof. I'm telling you, I'm going on that roof and I'm going to fix it.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Okay, up the ladder, up the ladder, up the roof. Yes. Okay, oh yeah, there's a hole. There's a hole.
Fix that one. Yes.
Yes, it's on. So anyway, I'm fixing my holes very nicely, but I'm sliding off the roof. Oh no, I'm going to fall. But fortunately, I grabbed the edge of the roof. Saved. And I tried to pull myself up. But because of the good lunches in the temple, I cannot actually pull myself up. I'm not saved. How long can I hang on this roof? Oh God, please help me. Need any help? Who are you? I am God. Oh God, God, please help me. All right, just let go of the roof and I will catch you. Can't you catch me first, and then I'll let go of the roof? So the point is that in spiritual life in the beginning we are like that. We're holding on to our roof, to our material things. Got my money in the bank, got my car. Yeah, a V8. Ooh. Got the latest phone in my pocket. I got everything you want in the world, and I'm chanting Hare Krishna. But I don't know why. But it doesn't really work for me. Got my car, I got my keys, I got my castle, I got my kingdom. Oh, I got it all. Yes, and I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I don't know, it doesn't really work for me. Yes. So this is the situation where we are actually holding on. So in the beginning we're like that. But then we get purified and we become fixed. And we say, no, Krishna is first. And whatever he says in the Gita, that I will do. In the beginning we say, what he says in the Gita, very difficult. Not really, but too much difficult. Who can do this? I want to, but it's too difficult. No Indian, no garlic, no how to do like this, too difficult. So we are attached, so we are struggling with the Gita. But when we become purified, we come to Nista, then we follow the Gita very seriously. That's the stage. And then you get to the top of the mountain. At that stage, spiritual life becomes magic. And then comes taste, more and more taste, and then it goes automatically. In the beginning, it's a struggle.
Like this, we advance in spiritual life.
Wow, this is good writing. Wow. You can read heavy words. Okay, thank you for a wonderful class. It was inspiring, but how do I keep being inspired? I don't want to go home forgetting everything I learned today and become uninspired. Very good. Yes, one shouldn't forget. So we should regularly hear, just like it said, Sapta Pare Chanisnatam Brahmani Pasamasram. You have to bathe, take your bath in transcendental sound every day. Every day. Just like you take a bath in water. You can't say, I took a bath yesterday. I took bath yesterday. You say, yeah, but how about today? Today is also necessary. Yes, every day, not just yesterday was good enough. No, every day. So in the same way, we must daily take our bath in transcendental sound. Sapta pare chanisnatam. Snatam comes from snan. Same roots. Snatam, nisnatam. We must take our bath in transcendental sound. In that way, you will always remain inspired. And you must, when you live in a home, you must invite devotees in your home. I have a proposal, and you can think about it. It takes 30 families to partake in this program, and the program is basically this. You, once a month, you invite the other 29 families, and you cook a big feast, and everyone gets his turn. In this way, you have to cook only once a month, and you get a feast every day. And also you get a devotee association every night. See, it's a good idea, good suggestion, you can think about it. Say something, cook only once a month. And a feast every day. Not bad. I am nearly 60. What is your best advice for someone just starting this journey? 60 is the youth of old age, my doctor told me. Well, every age has an advantage, and every age also has a disadvantage. Yeah? It's like when you're young, you've got lots of energy, lots of, and you can remember anything. When you're old, you have no energy, and you forget everything, right? So it's hard to learn things, you just forget everything all the time. So that is a problem. But when you're young, you have a lot of experience in life, and therefore you know how to deal with things. When you're older, so when you're old, you have a lot of experience in how to deal with things. When you're young, you don't, and therefore you have to experiment. So it all has an advantage. You see, young people can very easily take the Krishna consciousness and just join the whole thing. Older people, they take a little more time, but they move very deliberate. And with each, they can, with each step they take, they can take commitment more in more depth. So any age has an advantage. And 60, well, it's already youth of old age, so there's still plenty of time. Enough time to perfect the journey. I guess at 60, retirement is not far away. So now buy all the books, right? So that you have something to read and while you're retired, and something to do, because it can be very boring retirement, right? Especially now looking at those who have gray hairs, or those who dye it black, or other colors, especially look at them. And it's like, so retirement is really the time to read these books. Retirement is the time to think. The end of life, it's natural to think, actually. So even when you're young, you want to do something. When you're old, you're not so sure you want to do something. You're not so sure you want to do something. That's why you see old people, they sit in a rocking chair. That's enough exercise. young people. Yeah, fine. 2 minutes in the rocking chair, that's enough. Now let's go do something more exciting. The old people sit in the rocking chair. So when we're older, we naturally become more reflective. We are fooled with experiences. So at that time, this Vedic knowledge penetrates very deep. It connects to the wisdom of our life. So when one is older, it is nice, actually, to begin spiritual life. 60, just before retirement, it's the best time to start. At least you can't say, I have no time. What do I do to keep my mind focused while chanting? Well, the mind goes here, there, and everywhere, and while we're chanting, we're supposed to concentrate on the mantra, but it's very difficult. Right? So what to do? In the beginning, we force our mind, but that's difficult. But the more you find out about Krishna, the more you realize that Krishna is actually wonderful. And the more we realize that Krishna is wonderful, the more we'll naturally be drawn towards the mantra, because it's the name of Krishna. So we should, so to get more attraction to chanting and to become more attentive to chanting, we should hear more about Krishna. If the problem is that we are not hearing enough about Krishna, that is the problem. We need more. It begins sravanam and then kirtanam. First hearing, then chanting. So we must hear. And the more we hear about Krishna, regularly. See, you have these phones. And they're good things because, you know, you just take your phone and you just push a button and it opens up, no problem. And then you just push another button and then it opens up and you just choose whatever you want. We can have, what shall we have now? Okay. Let's see? You have something to listen to. You know, or like you say, well, okay. Something else? Yeah, I have. So many things I have for you. I have, what else I have?
Is a clause on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 8th chapter, text number 18. Given by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, recorded on April 5th, 1973, in New York.
Okay, let's move forward, because...
Oh,
I'm related with that gift of faith. I become his separate personality. That is my Dharada. Intuitively, I become so much.
So in this way, we can put so many things on our phones, and you carry it with you, and you turn the thing on. But somehow or other, just to do that is so difficult. And that we have to do voluntarily, turn it on. So, but that, in this way, it's very easy to hear about Krishna.
Okay, I'm almost on the questions.
So don't force me. I guess it's a little boring. Is there any mention in scriptures of the total number of souls in the material and spiritual world? If yes, then how many souls are there in the universe, in all the universes and planets? Said, no, the souls are unlimited. I mean, how many souls are in this room? Right? It's inconceivable. How many germs are there in this room? Every germ is a soul. It said there are living beings between the atoms. There are unlimited living beings. And still, there are more living beings in the spiritual world than here. But unlimited. How that's mathematically possible? If there are more than here, unlimited is unlimited. Anyway, that I let you puzzle out. The Prabhupada explains there are unlimited living beings. There is no number. No limit. Since we are all part and parcel of Krishna, however people do bad things in society, why doesn't he teach them a lesson in a lifetime rather than taking multiple lives? It's because Krishna, he doesn't need to take a lifetime. If he wants, he could teach us in one moment, just like that. If he wants to, no? Send a beam of light from the sky and suddenly we are self-realized. But Krishna, he doesn't want to force us. He wants us to come on our own accord. He gives us some encouragement sometimes. Sometimes he gives us also a little bit of trouble in the material. He puts a little scent in the sweet rice. Crunch, crunch. It's, I don't know about this sweet. It's very sweet, but it's a bit crunchy, isn't it? After a while, you start to think, maybe this is not perfect after all. So he does put something like that to remind us, to speed us up, but he is not forcing us. So he lets us come on our own accord. That's why it's not in one lifetime. Because we don't want to do it in one lifetime. But if we want to do it in one lifetime, we can. We can. If you just chant Hare Krishna this lifetime and follow the four regulated principles, no meat, fish, or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, then we can go back to Godhead this lifetime. End this whole cycle of reincarnation. Okay, this is offensive. Cows were so dear to Lord Krishna. Today, dairy industry treats cows so cruelly, kills cows. Is it acceptable to drink milk and offer it to God? Yes. By offering the milk to Krishna, right, these cows get eternal benefit. So in that way, at least in the middle of that misery of being mistreated, which we are feeling not happy about, at least they get some eternal benefit. So we should offer the milk, even from those cows that are being treated badly. Of course, it would be better to keep more cows and protect more cows. So if we can protect more cows, we must. But how many cows can we contain? So many cows. So, what can you do? But at least we can offer them milk. And then at least they can make spiritual advancements. So it's good to offer the milk, even of cows that are being mistreated. They're being mistreated, but at least they get some benefit. So we're not vegans, we're vegetarians. how to truly let go. And rise above pettiness. By becoming generous. Pettiness means miserliness. Miserliness means for me.
And it's all for me. You know, it's like, say,
you have some sweets, right? About 10. And you think, I'm not showing them to anyone. I'm going to hide behind that curtain. And when no one's looking, I'll put them all. So that's miserly. But if you share, okay, you also take some, but you share, then you actually create happiness. Right? And then you become generous. And actually, and people, they'll say, oh, you're so nice, and next time they'll give you also. And the relationships start to improve.
And say, but everyone holds on to their things.
Yeah. My money, my house, my. Yeah, and put a big sign that there's a big dog here in this garden, and beware of that dog.